where they can make the best impact.
A new food crime unit is to be set up following a major report on the horse meat scandal. Early last year, burgers and other processed products were removed from sale after tests revealed horse DNA. A group of experts is calling for over 40s to be taxed more to fund the NHS and social services. The Barker Commission also suggests winter fuel payments should be reserved for only the most in need older people and that the elderly should no longer get free TV licences. A group of illegal immigrants have been sprayed with fire hoses while trying to force their way onto a ferry at Calais. They tried to scramble up the ramp onto the P&O ship bound for Dover. And Dyson has unveiled its first robotic vacuum cleaner. It can be controlled by an app and navigates itself around a room using a 360-degree eye. That's the latest. I'm Emma Jones.
With hundreds of courses to choose from, Bristol City Council's Adult Learning Service has something for everyone. Explore our huge range of arts, crafts, and creative courses. Learn a language. Embrace the latest technology or enjoy a selection of health and well-being activities. Whatever you choose, it's the perfect way to meet new people and have fun. Choose your course and book a place at bristolcourses.com. Our autumn courses are enrolling now.
BCFM. September the 6th and the 7th, at a secret location near Bristol, is your chance to see the summer out in style at the second annual Mini V Festival. Mini V, Bristol's family-friendly charity festival celebrating all the best that Bristol has to offer, is here. Unmissable music, local food, top-class entertainment, farm tours and much more, all in the stunning location of the Chew Valley. And that's not all. There's cabaret and live music too. From dub pioneers Zion Train. Zion Train. Zion Train. Zion Train. Ten-piece salsa sensation. Baila la cumbia. An Afrobeat groover's Nubian twist. Plus there's local acoustic talent and DJ sessions from Bristol's one and only Soul Train. A true summertime celebration. Mini V has something for everyone, including children's DJ workshops from The Hive, Busy Bee Arts and Crafts, costume and chocolate making workshops, and even circus skills and breakdance workshops too. For all the info you need and to book your tickets, just visit minivee.co.uk and we'll see you there.
This is BCFM 93.2. The number one choice for Bristol.
Hello, and welcome to Dialect. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002, and goes out every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2 FM. was a track called Off Key by Uncut.
Your picture on the wall, it reminds me that it's not so bad, and it's not so bad. Drank too much last night, got bills to pay, and my head just spins out. Miss the bus, and they'll be hell today, cause I'm late for work again. Even if I'm there, they'll all imply that I might not last the day. And you call me. And it's not so bad, I said it's not so bad. I wanna thank you for this day of my life. And oh, just to be with you is the best day of my life. Push the door.
And produced by Mordecai.
Hi, I'm Duncan Bamridge. As you're aware, Tony's on holiday this week, but before he left, he managed to find the time to interview Dave Roberts of Global Civilians for Peace in Libya. Let's have a little listen and find out how he got on.
Yeah, I'm Dave Roberts. I was one of the leaders of the Global Civilians for Peace in Libya, which was an organisation that came together very quickly when the threat to Libyan sovereignty occurred in 2000, in the first few months of 2011. We were involved in sending several groups over to try and ascertain the truth of what was going on and to report accurately what was actually happening, because we were clearly getting a whole series of mixed messages from Western media. With the sole purpose of promoting dialogue rather than the warfare that was breaking out, and in the hope that we'd be able to prevent some sort of Western intervention.
Now, would you like to relate to us some of the things you found out? Because I know we were sold this idea here in most of the Western world, the English-speaking world and Europe, that Gaddafi had gone mad. Basically, he was bombing his own people that were peacefully demonstrating, and therefore international intervention was necessary, and that we went to the UN, and the UN Security Council gave us a no-fly zone. So that was certainly what we've heard here. And then, obviously, after that, there was an insurgency which ended up with Gaddafi being basically executed by a mob. So can you just tell us, take us through the Libyan uprising as you heard about it and as you saw it?
Yep, certainly. Well, the events really started in February in and around a series of demonstrations around the Abu Salim prison massacre that had taken place. But certainly certainly by the time we arrived, then it was, we very quickly realized that the idea that Gaddafi had been bombing his own people, which was an integral part of the campaign to get the resolutions 1917-1973 passed at the UN. It's because there's a UN rule that another country can intervene in another country if the country of the first government, if the government of the country has lost legitimacy. And usually what that would mean is that, yes, they are beginning to attack and bomb or put down various insurgencies. That was really the basis from which the West intervened, and we very quickly found out that none of that was actually true. There were three areas named that the government troops were accused of shelling and bombing, and we visited them very early on in our mission, and we pot-foxed local people. We were free to go where we were, where we liked. We interviewed a lot of local people, and of course, they very quickly informed us that no, there had been no bombings. I mean, we walked the streets; it looked like there hadn't been any. We talked to market traders who were, been trading there for weeks, and said no, it was just a fabrication by the West. There was another message coming out that Gaddafi was using foreign forces against his own people, which is why another justification for the intervention. Of course, we discovered that no, he wasn't using foreign forces. That the what was happening was that there were, Libya is a multicultural, multiracial society, or was. It had a lot of black Africans who were also Libyans, and many of them in the armed forces. And it was those troops that were being accused of being foreign forces in support of the Gaddafi government against the people. Again, completely false. We had early reports of lynchings of black soldiers, murder of black soldiers. We visited hospitals that had been bombed by NATO forces, supposedly by mistake, but one would have to, given the proximity of anything like a legitimate target or a military target, it couldn't have been by mistake. We interviewed we filmed the hospitals that had been bombed. We interviewed doctors and nurses who were living at the hospital, who were now hospitalized in Tripoli because their residential accommodation had been bombed by NATO forces.
Also, part of the intervention was justified by two major stories here in Britain, which go back decades, really. One is the Lockerbie bombing, and the other is the murder of PC Yvonne Fletcher. Now, I know if we go take those one by one, Lockerbie, there was a documentary made for Channel 4 by Alan Frankovich, who's now dead, unfortunately, called The Maltese Double Cross, which really does prove that Libya, at least it makes a very, very good case that Libya had nothing to do with the Lockerbie bombings, and the returning of al-Megrahi back to Libya does suggest very strongly that the British government didn't want his case to go through the courts here because things would be revealed they didn't want to be revealed. And secondly, there was a Fulcrum Productions, I think, did a film called Murder at in St. James, which also showed that the trajectory of the bullet that killed Yvonne Fletcher couldn't possibly have come from the Libyan embassy, and that testimony was from a ballistics expert from the British Army. So what's your view of these two major planks of the case to go into Libya?
I've been visiting Libya before for a number of years, and those were always at various conferences. Those two issues were always often on the agenda for discussion. And I know both the documentaries, and I think there was an earlier Channel 4 documentary on Yvonne Fletcher, and it wasn't some of the other anomalies around that case wasn't just simply the trajectory of the budget. I think she was the only PC or the only police constable killed on duty for about 150 years that a autopsy hadn't been published on. And I think it was specifically because, as you say, the trajectory of the bullet. But I think you need to look at the politics of both instances. I mean, if you look at the time of the Lockerbie bombing, then it was generally accepted in circles that a Palestinian-sponsored organization sponsored by the Iranians in vengeance or in revenge for the shooting down of the Iranian Airbus at a lot, I think, which killed about 270 Iranians coming back from Mecca by an American warship was the reason that Lockerbie had taken place. But at that particular time, the preparations for Gulf War One were taking place, and it was important that Syria particular and stayed out. And I think there was a deal done where, because the Palestinian groups were housed in Syria at the time, I think, and the West deliberately switched the pointing of the finger away from Syria and Iran to keep them out of Gulf War One, and pointed at Libya. It was just an act of convenience, really. I have a bit of a legal background, and having looked at the case against Megrahi, and if you look at, I think it's Professor Robert Black, who is the professor who persuaded the Libyan government to release the two suspects into Holland for a trial in an independent country, but under Scottish law, since the case and immediately after the case, was certainly lecturing law students that this was probably the greatest transgression of justice in the Scottish penal system, and that there just was not a shred of collaborative evidence, corroborative evidence that had been presented against Megrahi.
Okay, a bit more recently, we've seen Gaddafi killed, and also the country slowly descending into chaos. But let's go back to the execution of Gaddafi, because people have said that that there actually were Western troops on the ground, guiding and helping those that killed him. What's your thoughts about how culpable the West might be for what happened to Gaddafi?
Culpable. I mean, you can argue about the events of the day, and execution is perhaps too formal a word. I mean, it was a lynching of Gaddafi. It was a murder of a head of state by a mob, but a mob that had either been assisted, on the day directly with troops, and there is some evidence around that. But certainly the whole campaign from February up until his murder, six months later, was all about regime change and the murder of Gaddafi and his, as many of his top supporters and his leadership as possible. So they are culpable, whether they were engaged, whether they were actually there on the day of his murder. They certainly brought about the conditions, and they did the initial bombing, and may have identified them, and certainly directed the rebel mob to where he was.
And what about conditions, social conditions in Libya? Because there are a couple of things that point towards Libya actually being a really bit of a jewel in the crown of Africa under Gaddafi in some ways. I mean, the fact that they had an extremely low infant mortality rate, actually quite a substantial system of grants to students, for example, to go and study overseas, and generally living conditions supposed to be pretty good. I just wonder what your thoughts are about, what state Libya was in under Gaddafi from a sort of social justice point of view, and maybe how it is now.
Well, there just is no comparison. As you say, it had some of the highest incomes, all the welfare indices, World Health Statistics. Libya was the jewel in the crown. In fact, was better placed than some of the countries of Southern Europe in terms of the social indices, in terms of certainly education. I mean, there was free universal education to PhD, all the way up to PhD level. Women were encouraged to be involved in all aspects of public life. As you say, the low mortality rate, where it was the highest in the whole of Africa. In fact, in January, before the war broke out, before the intervention was being organized in February, the United Nations was about to award Gaddafi and Libya a human rights award for the development of education and welfare services in Africa. He was being held up as, you know, as you say, the jewel in the crown of African development. I certainly had, you know, personal and practical experience, both professionally and you know, politically, when I've been in Libya, of the incredible developments. And if you have to think that, in 1969, when Gaddafi came to power in a bloodless coup, the country was the most backward area of North Africa. And to achieve what they achieved within the 40 years, and to actually bring together all the factions that we've seen now, that have all been stirred up again with all their petty hatreds, to bring all those people together for 40 years. And it wasn't done, by dictatorial rule. It was done by the development of people's councils, which enfranchised everybody. In the sense that everybody could be involved in the political process. Anyone over 16 could join the local people's committee, where resources and policies, resources were distributed, policies were being developed, and take part in the political process on a day-by-day and weekly basis. It was a different form of government democracy, from the West. And why the West, should think that Gaddafi or the Libyan people should adopt their particular form of democracy over an indigenous developed form is another question, of course.
I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about that, because it seems to me maybe perhaps we in the West could learn something from this form of democracy that Gaddafi had developed in Libya. How did it work? And I wonder if you can point us towards any references by people can find out more about this.
Well, he's written most of it down in his green book, which is actually badly translated and is often poo-pooed by Western economists and Western theorists, economic theorists. But in terms of it, certainly worked for 40 odd years and worked very well for the Libyan people. It's called a direct democracy. It challenges the notion that democracy, the Western form of democracy, i.e. that, we every 4 or 5 years are given the privilege of going into a cloaked room and putting a cross against a name, and that is the sum total of your democratic choice for the next 5 years. It actually engages people and organizes them in people's committees, so everybody, wherever they lived in Libya, was entitled to attend their people's committee. Their people's committee would meet once a week. Those committees would be replicated at local level, regional level, all the way up to national level. It was a participatory form of democracy, often where officials were appointed by local people and were instantly recallable by local people and accountable to local people on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis. So there was no idea that you just put a cross on a piece of paper and that's the end of the democratic process for you. You can be engaged, you can be debating, discussing, deciding issues at a local level, or a regional level, or a national level. And I've certainly been in some of those, I'm witnessed with other academics from the UK, the workings of those people's committees. And they were certainly very different. There would be 2,500 people in a theatre who literally just walked in off the streets to hold the public officials to account, to explain, why things hadn't been done or had failed to be done within certain times, to discuss a whole set of policies, whether that's about, education, welfare, or pensions, or anything else. And of course, one of the greatest things was that they nationalized property, and everybody was entitled under the constitution to a house, and that every Libyan had to be housed, and every, and no one could have more than one, interesting enough.
Well, maybe we could learn a few things from that over here. What, we've got a million empty homes where people are just buying homes now, many of them just purely as like money in the bank. Anyway, what's the situation over in Libya now, Dave?
Well, interesting enough, I've just come off the phone an hour ago with a friend who's there at the moment, and is trying to get back. Is absolute, it's chaos. I mean, you've now got, according to the local paper, you've now got two prime ministers with, as rival factions are vying to, jockey for recognition as the legitimate government of Libya. The one faction has already put out a statement asking for Western intervention in order to be able to protect state assets because it cannot guarantee the security of its oil fields, of its public buildings, of its highways, of its airports, from rival militia gangs, many of them jihadist gangs, who are literally vying for power and setting up their own individual fiefdoms across the whole of Libya. And of course, you've got this farce where the government has been, the parliament has been housed in a ship offshore for the last several months because it's unsafe for them to actually operate on the land in Libya. Western policy may have been to wreck that country rather than bring some sort of functioning democracy to it.
What about the part it's played in the creation of ISIS? Because I understand quite a lot of those people have come from Libya, and the people who were fighting in Syria did as well.
Yeah, well, interesting enough that the Libyans, the Libyan fighting groups and the Libyan jihadists have provided many of the ISIS, as you say, and Syrian fighters. But and of course, with the overthrow of the Gaddafi regime and the collapse of order, there were millions of rounds of ammunition, weaponry that were just sort of leached from the country and have spread across conflicts throughout the rest of Africa and into the Middle East, as you say. It's been an absolute disaster on our foreign policy move on all accounts. It was designed to either make Europe more secure or bring about some sort of stability, then it's clearly, palpably, completely and utterly failed. And of course, it's been a massive destruction for the Libyan people, who've lost all of those social gains we've talked about. One third of them, the idea that a government can have legitimacy with one third of your population who now live in terror abroad because they can't live at home, it's just a nonsense.
What about your work, Dave? How do listeners follow what you're up to and your latest research?
Well, you can go back onto, if you go back onto the Global Civilians for Peace in Libya, there are recent updates. There are some links if you go through that site. That has not been that busy recently, but it has certainly got the most definitive history of the months February to September and the overthrow of Gaddafi, and on that site will be links to other sites which can be trusted sources.
And what about your film? What was it called again, and where can people watch it online?
You can watch it online on that Global Civilian site. It was called Libyan the Libyan Crisis, Facts, Effects and Causes.
Final question, whereabouts do you think this is all leading?
In terms of the scale of destruction that's now sweeping across the Middle East, and of course, even the developments in the Ukraine, then there is, my view is that there's a global conflagration on the way. And people are banding around the idea of World War III, but I think, it has all the potential. Even the Pope has come out and suggested that we're getting very close to the sort of conditions in the 1930s, where there was also flagrant regard to international law, and governments and various factions started invading other people's countries and attempting to regime change. Once you've gone down that route, we went down that route with, to an extent, with the Balkans, with Iraq, certainly with Libya, and again, an attempt in Syria, then, you've ripped up all the rules and of international law and chaos and general warmongering will prevail.
Okay, well, Dave Roberts, thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
And you can find Dave Roberts online at www.globalciviliansforpeace.wordpress.com.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.
Ice Age 2000, and that track was from the album Nova Mova, The Wasted Lands.
Bristol Community FM 93.2. Your voice, your choice.
And now, moving on to our weekly creationist feature from scientist and high school teacher Kent Hovind. I think we'll just start where we left off last week.
Folks, look, we are in serious trouble. But if you get all nervous about the New World Order, you need to read Psalm chapter 2. It'll calm you right down. Psalm chapter 2. Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves, the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast off their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. Hey, God's up in heaven laughing about this new world order. What are we getting all nervous about? Huh?
Right. Right.
God's laughing at him. You idiot. He's busting a gut, man. This is hilarious. Look at these guys. They think they're going to rule the world. I'll show them. What should we do? Well, there's coming a great tribulation, folks, such as was not since the beginning of the world. God knew all this 2,000 years ago. He knew it before that. You think what Hitler did was bad? Wait till you see what's coming. Mm-hmm. You think what Stalin did was bad? Wait till you see what's coming. Mm-hmm. Here in America and all around the world, you're going to see famines and diseases and all these microorganisms being manufactured in the laboratories in Maryland and in Florida that are purposely being introduced, like the AIDS virus and all that stuff. Look, I read all that stuff. I'm familiar with it. Yes, it's a lot of it's true. But we're getting the wrong reaction. What should we do about it? Hosea said, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
We need to know what's going on. I think we need to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But folks, America is about to, we're about to go under. We're not going to be a world power. We're not even going to be a free nation much longer. I think it's time to get motivated. It's not time to get nervous, but it is time to get busy. Right? Time to get motivated. All right. What should we do? We should realize God is in control. Psalms chapter 2, read it and go to sleep. We should be wise as serpents. We should be careful for nothing. Careful. Full of care. Some of you folks that study all the prophecies are so worried about the future, you're not obeying that verse. You're full of cares and worries. Hey, nothing you can do about it anyway, not much. I mean, do what you can and forget it.
Yeah.
Quit being so worried. Pray for those in authority over us.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe if you prayed for your 5 school board members, you'd know their name next time somebody asked you, huh? For God's children, obey his orders. Just do what he says. It's very simple. We don't have to worry about the outcome. We just have to obey the Father. That's all we got to do. Just do what he says. If that means going to the lion's den, go on in.
Yeah.
If that means going to the fiery furnace, go on in. I have a goal. I want to take the creation message and destroy the evolution philosophy because it, based on Satan's lie to Eve, is the underlying philosophy that's causing all these social problems we see. Evolution is the philosophy behind abortion, Nazism, the New Age movement. It all comes from the same philosophy. Instead of plucking the branches off this tree, let's cut the thing down. Joseph Stalin believed in evolution, but he didn't always believe in it. You know, Joseph Stalin went to a Catholic school as a kid. While he was in the Catholic, I got the article right here. While Joseph Stalin was in the Catholic school, you ought to get these impact articles from ICR in California. They're 10 cents a piece. They've done about 290 of them now. So for $29, you can get all the back issues. Excellent research. Number 172 talks about Stalin's brutal faith. Stalin, while a pupil at the ecclesiastical school, here's the article right here, Comrade Stalin developed a critical mind and revolutionary sentiments. He began to read Darwin and became an atheist. You know, Joseph Stalin had his philosophy changed by this book right here. While Joseph Stalin was the dictator in the Soviet Union, he killed 60 million people. Hitler only killed 6 million. Joseph Stalin signed the executive order to execute the Polish prisoners taken at Katyn. See, when World War I or II broke out, Russia hit Poland from one side, Germany hit him from the other side. Poland, hopelessly trapped. They ferocious resistance and collapsed in 5 days. So they had all these prisoners. They said, Stalin, what should we do with all the Polish officers? He said, they're just Poles. They haven't evolved as far as we have. Execute them. The Russians finally admitted they did that in 1992. I got the article on the yellow poster around here someplace. Finally admitted it. They took 14,700 Polish officers, put hoods over their heads, tied their arms behind their back,
jerked them up as hard as they could, and then wrapped the rope around the hood, marched them out, and shot them in the back of the head. You say, Brother Hovind, that's not nice. That's against the Geneva Convention. Well, duh. Yeah. Don't you understand, though? If you believe in evolution, treaties and conventions are only another means of getting ahead. Because there is no right and wrong. Hey, if a lion makes a treaty with the lamb, should the lamb be excited? Hey, Mr. Lion, you said you wouldn't hurt me. You signed your name right here. Ha ha. What's the lion going to do with that when he's hungry? Communists say, we want peace, peace. Yeah, they want a piece of North Vietnam and then a piece of South Vietnam and a piece of Korea. They want all the pieces, yeah. Their idea of peace is absence of resistance to communism. That's their idea. That's their definition of peace. Absence of resistance. Folks, we've got a problem. When communism took over China, 1949 to 1946 to 49, with American help, by the way, they began executing Christians in China because Christians don't fit into these New World Order ideas very good. They executed 10 to 15,000 a month. Under that incredible persecution, the Chinese church grew to 55 million. And the Chinese are over there praying right now, Lord, please send persecution to America because it will strengthen the church so much.
Yes.
It's coming. It's coming soon. A guy named Pol Pot was the leader of a group called the Khmer Rouge. They ruled Cambodia, 1975 to 79. Ooh, after America pulled out, huh? Yep. While Pol Pot ruled Cambodia, he executed at least a third of his entire population. Some people say it might have been half. Why would you kill half your own people? Well, you see, Pol Pot was a communist and a strong believer in a theory called evolution. And he thought we need to eliminate anybody that doesn't fit in, and we're going to make our society evolve faster. That's from Guinness Book of World Records. Why would they do that? Look, if you've got a strong stomach, you ought to check out and watch the movie The Killing Fields. But when you do it, find somebody in your community who is from Cambodia, who was there when it happened. Have them watch the movie with you. They will say, this is horrible, but this is not nearly as bad as it really was. It was much worse. We've got people in Pensacola, Cambodians, who are taking English as a second language. My next door neighbor is teaching them. They are the only survivor from their family. Brothers and sisters, mom, dad, aunts, uncles, children, everybody killed. They are the only survivor. You think they'll ever get over that? That's what communism does. Peter Singer said, Christianity is our foe. If animal rights is to succeed, ooh, hug a tree, huh? We need to destroy the Judeo-Christian religious tradition. Folks, there's a war going on. It's a war of philosophies. And it boils down to creation versus evolution. God's philosophy versus Satan's philosophy. That's what it all boils down to. Peter Singer believes in evolution. The trees have rights equal to or surpassing the human rights. David Foreman in Earth First said, we must make this an insecure and inhospitable place for capitalists and their projects. We must reclaim the roads, plowed land, halt dam construction, tear down existing dams, free shackled rivers, and return to wilderness millions and tens of millions of acres of presently settled land. All right, David, let's start with your house. Oh, they don't want that. They want to tear down somebody else's house, not theirs. Prince Philip, you ever heard of him? Founder of the World Wildlife Fund, said, if I were reincarnated, I would wish to return to Earth as a killer virus to lower human population levels. You know what his problem is? His problem is his philosophy. He doesn't see things the way God sees them. He sees the world the way the devil sees it. Man is the enemy. Satan hates humanity. Now, Prince Philip is not the enemy, but he does work for him. We need to try to win Prince Philip to the Lord. Any human, regardless of what they do, I mean, Adolf Hitler could have got saved. God can forgive you. But we need to be careful to distinguish who the enemy is, and it's Satan, okay? It's not these people. In order to stabilize world population, we need to eliminate 350,000 people a day, Jacques Cousteau said. Something's wrong with his philosophy. Huh. John D. Rockefeller believed in evolution, but he applied it to the business world. And you will not understand the history of the 1800s until you see how the evolution philosophy ties in. These guys that developed their big monopolies, we finally had to get the trust busters and the unions and the child labor laws and all that kind of stuff. It all comes back to a basic philosophy of right and wrong based on, are there absolute rights come from God? Or is it the strongest survive? You won't understand what happened with Rockefeller and Carnegie and all those industrial giants until you see how their philosophy was affected by Charles Darwin. Go back and read about them with that in mind. See what you think.
And once again, there'll be more from creation scientist Kent Hovind next week.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
I'm Jeff Sparks, and this is your What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Friday, 5th of September, two of the most authentic tribute acts around, Guns N' Roses and Metallica Reloaded, will be performing with support from Whiskey Lies at the O2 Academy in Frogmore Street, Bristol. Tickets are £11 in advance and doors open at 6:30 p.m. Also on 5th of September, the Iron Maiden tribute act, Power Slaves, will be performing at the Records Engineer in Temple Gate, Bristol. Entry is free and the gig starts at 9:30 p.m. On to Song of the Week, and I present Zodiac Mind Warp and The Love Reaction. This group formed in 1988, and in their career they have released 6 studio albums, 2 live albums, 3 EPs and 3 singles. This is from the album The Best Of, which is basically a reissue of the debut album Tattooed Beat Messiah, and is the song Backseat Education.
Special car, huh?
Love.
That was Zodiac Mind Warp and the Love Reaction with Backseat Education. Into Saturday, 6th of September, the Imperials will be performing at the Thunderbolt in Bath Road, Bristol. Tickets are £5 in advance and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Finally, on Tuesday, 9th of September, Brian Adams will be performing at the Colston Hall in Colston Street, Bristol. Tickets start at £43 in advance and doors open at 7 p.m. That is all from me. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
Well, that's all for this week. Dialect is Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast and is on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11 a.m. every Thursday morning. If you're online and can subscribe to our emails or download the podcast from dialectradio.co.uk or this and many other from Radio for All, that's radio4all.org from bcfmradio.com/dialect. Dialect is a Bristol Broadband Cooperative production and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733 or at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. That was Dialect. Thanks for listening. So until the same time next week, goodbye for now.
Getting bigger by being better. The number one choice for Bristol. This is BCFM 93.2. One nation, one world. On Bristol's BCFM 93.2. Inclusive radio for Bristol. This is your award-winning BCFM. BCFM on 93.2. 24 hours a day.
Not all of us hate you.
Some of us love you. Some just don't understand you.
Others don't want to know you. You could be me or him
or her.
You could be black, white,
Christian, Muslim,
disabled or unemployed. You could be transgender,
bisexual,
gay or straight.
You could be a refugee or an asylum seeker.
But not all of us hate you.
If we knew you, we would probably love you.
But first, we need to understand you.
Don't always believe what you read. Get to know the people you don't understand.
And understand the people you think you hate.
Our city will be a better place for us all if we respect each other's differences.
After all, you could be him.
Or her.
Or even me.
September the 6th and the 7th, at a secret location near Bristol, is your chance to see the summer out in style.
This is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 12, NATO's Secretary General says its summit in South Wales will be one of the most important in the organisation's history. 60 world leaders will spend the next 2 days discussing major security threats. Anders Fogh Rasmussen says there are two major issues on the agenda.
A crucial summit at a crucial time. To the east, Russia is attacking Ukraine. To the southeast, we see the rise of a terrorist organisation, the so-called Islamic State.
Meanwhile, David Cameron has ruled out a ransom being paid for a British hostage being held by Islamic extremists. Some police forces in England and Wales are telling victims of crime to investigate the offences themselves. A report has found there's a postcode lottery in how the same type of crime is dealt with across the country. Dozens of immigrants have been sprayed with a fire hose to stop them boarding a ferry in Calais. Matt Steele has more.
The water was blasted at a group of around 100 illegal immigrants as they breached security and tried to board the cross-channel ferry. Crew raised the ramp and riot police were deployed to